Up WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump says he'll decide within 2 weeks whether to carry out a strike on Iran. Foreign ministers of the UK, France, and Germany are meeting with their Iranian counterpart today. The BBC's Imogene Fuchs.
They are hoping to de-escalate and try and find a way where Israel and Iran can calm things down, stop bombing each other, and then get back to the negotiating table with the United States.
An appeals court rules President Trump may remain in control over California's National Guard after sending troops into L.A. to monitor anti-ICE demonstrators. Loyola Law's Lori Levinson.
In this particular circumstance, the Ninth Circuit said that under the statute, a great deal of deference must be given to the president.
In London, singer Chris Brown showed up at court and pleaded not guilty to beating a music producer with a bottle at a nightclub in 2023. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin State Assembly voted unanimously to increase penalties for people found guilty of sextortion on Wednesday, named Braden's Law in memory of a Wisconsin teen who took his own life as a result of a sextortion scheme. The law would allow sextortion perpetrators to be charged with felony murder if their victim commits suicide. The charges that would most accurately apply to the crime currently include a maximum sentencing of only 3.5 years. The legislation is now with the state Senate and appears likely to advance to Governor Tony Evers. The Wisconsin State Senate approved a bill on Wednesday that would create new felony charges for rioters and make it easier for residents and businesses to file a lawsuit for property damage. Republican lawmakers claim there's been an increase in violent riots since 2020 and say there needs to be stronger penalties for rioters. Democratic lawmakers raised concerns about First Amendment violations and warned that the language of the bill could mean any person in a protest group could face charges if just one of them causes property damage or injuries. Polk County residents will soon start seeing anti-tobacco posters around the area thanks to a student contest organized by the Polk County Health Department and Western Wisconsin Tobacco Free Alliance. County officials say local students submitted 21 posters for the contest, and 6 of those posters will be displayed throughout the area over the next few months. The contest was open to middle school students from Barron, Burnett, Pepin, Pierce, Polk, Rusk, and St. Croix counties. The posters direct residents to the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line. The Rusk County Sheriff's Office and the Wisconsin Department of Justice have announced the arrest of a man accused of scamming an elderly resident. According to Sheriff Philip Grossman, a sting operation led to the arrest of Mitesh Kumar Chaudhary on Tuesday. Sheriff Grossman says Chaudhary is also suspected of being in the United States unlawfully, and his office has been in contact with immigration authorities. He's reminding older residents to be wary of common scam practices like threatening phone calls or demands for financial information. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers head to Minnesota. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball? The Brewers open a 3-game series tonight against the Minnesota Twins. The crew held on to beat the Cubs 8-7, thanks to closer Trevor McGill, who had several pitches over the plate called balls instead of strikes. Was the home plate umpire erratic? We asked Pat Murphy.
Erratic. Is there a strategy?
Was he? You said it. I did not say that.
Correct. I said it.
It's a waste of time, in my opinion, for managers to address umpires on balls and strikes. It's a waste of time.
Basketball, the Pacers came roaring back with a 108-91 victory over the Thunder in the NBA Finals. Oshkosh, Wisconsin's Tyrese Halliburton on the decision to play despite a strained calf muscle injury.
I just wanted to be out there and fight, and just had to have an honest conversation with coach that, you know, if I didn't look like myself and, you know, was hurting the team, like, sit me down.
That's the Pacers' Tyrese Halliburton. Game 7, Sunday night in Oklahoma City. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Hi, meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Showers and a few thunderstorms around early, otherwise a mix of clouds and sun and warm with a high of 83. For tonight, partly cloudy, warm and muggy, a low of 74. Hot and humid this weekend, highs in the mid-90s. Heat index values above 100. Right now, it's 66 degrees.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area will be here to recap all of the week's news. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matinair on Air.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Friday morning, June 20th, 2025. It's another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota. From wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, or listening or watching us on all the other platforms, we appreciate you starting your day and wrapping up your week right here. I do have a question for you, though. I mean, it's Friday. It's a Friday in June. And like most Fridays, I have my Roy Kent coffee mug here, where Roy Kent is saying, oi, which is the nicest word that he says that I can share on the radio. And yet, even with the Roy Kent mug, why doesn't it feel quite like Friday? I mean, it's summertime now. It's June. Wait a minute. It occurs to me, Fridays in the summer are for Yacht Rock. Parker Olson down there in Madison, Studio A2. Do you have a record handy? Could you put the needle on that record and spin it to help me get into more of a Friday frame of mind, please?
Are you thinking something like this, perchance?
Oh, there, my goodness.
Does this make you feel better?
Yes.
Yeah, does this feel like Friday?
I almost don't need coffee now.
Oh, hey. Congrats.
Almost. There. See, a little Yacht Rock Friday is just there. We just needed that little dose to get into things here. How are things in beautiful Madison? I've been up since 3 when a line of thunderstorms moved through it. It was the kind where it wasn't one or two lightning strikes. It was like rolling thunder for a half hour or more, just constant thunder.
That sounds bad. Yeah, I was wondering why you weren't wearing your glasses. Maybe it's because we were up since 3. Is that why?
Yeah, I'm now awake enough. That extra hour is like, okay, I can't put the contacts in that early. But when you've been awake long enough, you're like, all right, I can wear these today. So,
fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got the storms up here. I haven't looked at the radar, so I don't know what you got out there. But
I don't think anything down here.
Across central Wisconsin, moving across western Wisconsin, we had a very loud storm that came through. And now as I'm looking, it really has been almost more like a river of rain, and we got a little bit of it, but most of it was to the north, pretty much along Highway 8, and then down toward Wausau, and then it takes a turn toward Appleton, and right now, New London's getting whomped, that's the technical term, and Appleton, yes. Appleton is in the crosshairs, and Green Bay is getting heavy rain, too. There's also another area of showers stretching more or less from Black River Falls down to Prairie du Chien, with the heaviest rain in the far southwest corner of the state. And Brittany Merlot will have that forecast detail for us in a little bit here.
She'll tell it much better than us.
What are you saying? That wasn't. Did I not do a good enough job there?
She has a, no offense, Pat.
Yeah.
She has such a perfect meteorologist voice.
She does.
It'll be spot on.
Yes. She will. So, yes, there is rain headed your way, but not anything as
booming as what you had.
Booming, yes, yes. Tony asking, did the storm steal your glasses, Pat? No, that's not it. And Tony noting, Parker has a new camera angle. Fancy. For folks watching on social media, yeah, it's quite a day. It's like no glasses on Pat, and Parker now no longer looks like a little tiny person in the corner of the screen. He's actually got a camera right there by him.
Yeah, it's very nice. And you know what? This cost Civic Media $0. Because
did Luke do it out of the goodness of his heart?
Dom has had this camera sitting in his backpack for a year and a half.
What?
And said, you know, I don't need this anymore. Here.
Oh, that's funny. Dom, by the way, Dom, folks used to be hearing Dominic, who's moved on to other endeavors here. Dom is one of our new young producers.
He's on John and Gordy.
And he's on a show here in Madison. And he just happened to have a camera in his backpack and said, here, guys, you can use this.
Pretty much, yeah. said, okay, I will take that and I will plug that in right now and figure this out.
And look at that, plug and play. It works just fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look at all the things different. The camera is different. The eyewear is different. And the lineup of the show is different as well. It was one of those weeks where just everything came together and said, let's shake up the lineup. So we will not be hearing from Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. He's on vacation this week. I hope he's having fun. Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob, two of our favorite Chicago journalists who join our Week in Review panel, are each on the road today. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel has an early court hearing today. So here's what we got instead. There's a new report out by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation on President Trump's big bloated boondoggle of a budget bill and what all the Medicaid cuts would do to rural hospitals. And so we'll look at the Wisconsin end of that, a nearly $4 billion hit to Wisconsin hospitals over the coming decade if this bill were to pass as is. And what would that mean in terms of all the uncompensated care, all the financial pressure that that would put on rural hospitals? We know how many have closed already. What happens if this plan goes through to transfer all of this money from Medicaid into tax cuts for the very rich? We will talk to somebody from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation about that story coming up, about that study, I should say. In our 7 o'clock hour then, instead of Jim and Mark and Jennifer, we have Chicago broadcast legend Joan Esposito joining us to talk about some of the week's big stories. And then at 8 o'clock, we get things back into a normal groove with Kristen Lierley joining us at 8:05, talking about what you can hear on the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show coming up tomorrow. You can hear her show weekends through the Civic Media app or on the stations in Green Bay and Oshkosh. And then Mike Clemens will be along at 8:30 to talk about sports. And there'll be plenty of ground to cover, but I hope we spend a little bit of time on that Cubs-Brewers game from yesterday. All right, the good news is the Brewers won over the Cubs, 8-7. But I am here to tell you that there is a new Angel Hernandez out there in the world, and his name is Adam Beck. Parker, you work all those Madison Mallard baseball games, and so if I say Angel Hernandez, you probably know what I'm talking about, right?
If I hear Angel Hernandez, I think I don't want to watch this game anymore.
Angel Hernandez was legendary.
Yeah, he's one of a kind.
For his balls and strikes calls.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it at that. And I really hope that his cane and his seeing-eye dog are serving him well in retirement. Anyway, things were getting a little dicey there in the ninth inning. Fortunately, Brewers closer Trevor McGill induced a game-ending double play, wrapping up that 8-7 win over the Cubs. But he had to overcome several poorly missed calls by home plate umpire Adam Beck. Did you look at this at all? Did you see Pat Murphy?
I saw Pat. Murph was flaming.
I thought, Sherry and I were both watching the game and we're like, he's going to explode. He is literally going to explode. He did not come out of the dugout, but was he barking, and rightly so. These calls were awful. That, you know, that Trevor McGill's throwing, and they're hitting the zone. They're nibbling the zone. Any of the robot umpires, please bring them on, would have rightly called them strikes And Adam Beck called him a ball.
It's a good thing that he got a double play out of that, because he sure wasn't going to get a couple of strikeouts.
I thought that ball was going to go through. That led to the game-ending double play. I thought, if this goes through and they tie or win, I mean, we're done talking about Adam Beck now, but had we lost that game, I'd probably spend the whole show talking about it, because it was just so bad.
It was pretty bad.
In terms of pitching, I wasn't sure if Jacob Mizorowski was going to pitch, because he was supposed to on Wednesday night. That game got rained out. But Murph decided to keep Freddy Peralta on his regular schedule, so he started the game yesterday. He did all right. He struck out six, including four in a row at one point. He gave up only two hits, but both were home runs. So Jacob Mizorowski is going to start tonight when the Brewers head up to Target Field to take on the Minnesota Twins. Coverage of that game begins at 6:35 this evening on several Civic Media stations around Wisconsin. Head over to the Civic Media website to learn more about the Brewers taking on the Twins at Target Field this weekend. In the NBA Finals, I didn't grab the score in front of me here, but I do see that Indiana forced a Game 7 winning last night, so there will be a Game 7. Did you catch what day that is? I'll have to look it up later. I'd have to care a bit more. Here's what I know. What I know is, everybody said, oh, nobody wants this. Two small market teams, Indiana and Oklahoma City, nobody wants to watch it. The one thing the NBA would always tell you is, it doesn't matter who the teams are, if you can squeeze seven games out of it.
And yep.
Believe it or not, they're going to a Game 7. I know. You want to see my shocked face? But yeah.
Yeah. It'll be on Sunday at 7 o'clock.
Sunday at 7. Okay, very good. And look at that, Luke, right on time, Sunday night on the text line. Thank you, sir. WIAA baseball championships were decided yesterday. Let's see. So we've got in Division 4, the Johnson Creek Blue Jays shut out Stevens Point Pacelli 5-0. In D3, Kenosha St. Joseph, the Lancers took down Kewaunee 3-2. In D2. In Division 2, New Berlin Eisenhower is your state champion over Seymour 5-4 yesterday. And in Division 1, it was Muskego over Badger, also by a score of 5-4. So there are your state high school baseball champions. And the girls soccer championships continue in Milwaukee. I believe they may have had a weather delay. I thought the championships were going to be yesterday, but it was a whole bunch of semifinal games. Uh-huh. So that's what's happening on that. Wanted to remind you as well that you can't always catch us live. Maybe you'd like to catch us as a podcast. To do so, head over to Spotify or to Apple or wherever you get your podcasts and sign up that way. We'd love to have you along, and that way you can listen back to something if need be, and share with a friend as well. One final thing here I wanted to point out, Parker. I mentioned Target Field, and that's what made me think about it. You ever go into Target and realize you didn't bring a list, and you're not sure if you got what you came in for?
Yeah.
Because I did the other day. Went in, and I'm like, I just know I need two things. I could remember the one thing. I could not come up with the other thing to save my life. Was it two bags of potato chips? No, but I bought them anyway. Yeah. Well, you know, was it something a little bit extra for the garage? No, but I needed that anyway. So I have to stop. If you go into a store like that without a list, and especially Target, I mean,
there's too much.
There's just, you're going to spend so much, and then you're going to go, oh, wait, I forgot the thing I went in there for.
Yeah.
Bring a list, kids. Bring a list.
Yeah.
We'll be back to cover some of the day's news in a bit from the heart of America's up north. Live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 6:19.
Yes, not yes, 6:20. It is. I was going to say, I have music, okay, but I don't have over a minute of music.
Give me the sad trombones from The Price is Right. Go ahead. That was a complete and utter. Oh.
You earned that one.
Wow, I really did.
And you didn't even mention.
I didn't even flinch.
Well,
what did I mention?
You didn't even mention it's Free Ticket Friday.
I didn't mention it's Free Ticket Friday. Where did I put that? I had that in my notes.
I messaged you just now saying, hey, you know what, Pat? It's Free Ticket Friday. Oh, stay tuned, folks. We'll have some free tickets for you.
All right. Well, hey, let me tell you all about Free Ticket Friday. So you're going to need this keyword, and you're going to need the Civic Media app, and you're going to text it, and then you're going to win. Oh, I've run out of time. Apparently, there's this commercial break I need to get to. All right. More about Free Ticket Friday after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
What a professional.
I tell you, I trained for this.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, the Tally's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Man, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
You know, if you'd like to speak your mind at this show and, you know, yell at the host for forgetting how to tell time or anything like that, you can use the voice note feature on the Civic Media app. You can record a little message with a comment or a question. We might play it on air. Parker, you didn't by chance save yesterday's message from those adorable young children up in the Ashland area.
I did not. However, okay. I can get it for you in a couple of seconds here. I can probably stall long enough.
I can read the forecast because, again, somebody is sleepwalking into his Friday here, and I neglected to give you Brittany Merlot's state forecast. I told you it was raining, but let's move beyond nowcasting and into forecasting. Brittany writes, another day of rain and storms before the heat dome hits, bringing a heat index of around 100 degrees for Saturday and Sunday. Going to be dry all weekend before a front slides into Wisconsin next week. But for the weekend, it's going to be sunny and hot. For today, areas of rain and storms in the morning, patches of sun in the afternoon. Highs today in the upper 70s up north, mid-80s south, and a southwest wind at 10 to 20 miles an hour. For tonight, scattered thunderstorms, especially far north, some strong to severe. Mid-60s up north, near 70 south for lows tonight. And a southeast wind at 10 to 15 miles an hour. And again, Brittany will have much more to tell us about that right after the 7 o'clock news here. So how can you do you now have a demonstration of how that voice note feature works on the Civic Media app?
It goes something like this. You go into the app, and then you can record a beautiful thing like this.
I don't like listening to my daddy.
You're supposed to say, I love listening to Pat Kreitlow in the morning.
That's just one of the things that you can do with that wonderful show notes. Yeah.
But of course, that was you know, that was Tony and Ashley. That was only one of his kids.
The morning.
One more time.
Hello, listen to Pat in the morning.
You can listen to Pat in the morning anytime you want if you're going to send us voice notes like that. So that's wonderful. Thank you. I know you feel like I can't compete with that, but go ahead and try, you know. And Alicia putting up on YouTube, going to have to break out the straw hat for Fox Valley Pride tomorrow. Yes, you are. Mm-hmm. Sunscreen hats. Remember the hats, kids. I know they're not always fashionable, but they are. They can be fashionable, but they are extremely necessary. All right, quick update from the state capitol, where once again, state budget talks have broken off. I know what you're thinking, like, wait, you just told us. Wasn't it a week ago that Republicans had broken off negotiations with Governor Tony Evers? Yeah, but apparently they were back on again. Once again, they didn't like tell us, not that they have to, but they do tell us when they break off. And apparently Senate Republicans were the ones to break off talks. Assembly Republicans, led by Robin Voss, said, we're happy to keep talking with the governor. We'll see what we can do here. But Senate Republicans, led by Majority Leader Devin Lemieux, apparently said, nope, they're just too far apart. Now, as Jesse O'Poyne tells us in the Journal Sentinel, a delayed budget is not a big deal in terms of there won't be a government shutdown. You just continue with the current budget. But as she notes, a delayed budget can affect budgeting for school districts and local governments while they await to see how much state aid they're going to get. And it can interfere with deadlines for federal funding. So the question becomes, why do these break off? Is it because Republicans are divided and some of their more extreme members want even bigger cuts? They want more of a confrontation with the governor. Is that what it is? Because what Republicans could do then is turn to Democrats and say, look, we want a more responsible budget. We want more of a win-win. We got to go to the voters and say that we did something. And so let's work together. Let's negotiate on something. Or is it that they feel like, nope, if we negotiate with Democrats, you know, we're going to lose? Which I don't know where you get that from. In Congress, the only time they got budgets passed recently was going to Democrats and getting a handful of votes and not letting the most extreme members of your caucus drive the train, because they're going to drive it right off the tracks, take your entire party with you. You see, the state Senate is Republican majority 18-15. But a couple of members have already said they won't vote for the state budget plan, most likely, which means that they would have to negotiate with Democrats to get enough votes to pass. But as I've noted, that assumes they actually want to pass a budget. It could very well be that the Republican strategy is to say, well, we did all we could, but we just can't get something done. So we're just going to continue with the current budget because in their mind, it's more fiscally conservative. It comes with a lot of political risk if they do it, but it's something that some of them may just want to do because they are so unhappy that Governor Tony Evers is governor and can veto things with, you know, the partial veto powers that a governor has. I mentioned this late yesterday, in case you weren't around for it near the end of the show. I talked about how Republicans like State Senator Romaine Quinn of Rice Lake were getting up on the Senate floor the other day and just railing against, you know, Governor Evers being able to veto funds. And so as a result, the Joint Finance Committee isn't releasing these funds, $15 million for hospitals in the Chippewa Valley, all the money that was going to go for getting PFAS out of water and so forth. And Senator Quinn and others are saying, well, we're standing up for the legitimacy of the legislative branch. No, if the legislative branch wanted legitimacy, they would understand that if they want to override a veto, hold the vote. And if you can override the veto, great. And if you can't override the veto, that's the way it works. But for you to then rig the rules of the game a bit and say, well, we're just not going to release this money that I know we already approved, but we're not going to release it. You know, that's what makes you look bad. That's what makes you look like extremists. And there is no respect for the legislative branch if you can't respect the rules. So we just have to wait and see what happens next. If Senate Republicans come back to the table, do they try to bring a couple of Democratic votes and have a budget that's good for all of Wisconsin? Or do they let the extremists, like the pigeon in the kids' books, drive the bus? Don't let the pigeon drive the bus. Don't let the extremists rule a roost. Back to talk about Medicaid and rural hospitals next. You're up north.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
No, when it comes to technology, Wisconsin farms are all about it. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a finally Friday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. Markets back in trade after a Juneteenth break. We'll get to the numbers in just a moment. But right now, we're focused in on the technology that Wisconsin farms are leaning into, whether it's air conditioning for the cows during the hot summer days that we're experiencing in Wisconsin, or whether it's trying to make sure that they're precisely using herbicides or fungicides on their crops. Wisconsin farmers are leaning in. That's the word from Ben Becker, owner and operator of Penguin Drones. He explains how that technology is being used today on Wisconsin farms.
So if you compare it to a ground rig, you're not running over the crops. So you get some return there. You're not damaging the field with ruts and soil compaction. For weather and getting out onto the field, if it's been raining for 3 days, you can't get a tractor out there, but you could get a drone flying the moment it stops raining.
Ben Becker, he is the owner and operator of Penguin Drones. He says he's finding farms of all sizes that are interested in drone technology today. He said he was attracted to the industry for some of the same reasons that farmers are. It's precise, it's effective, it's affordable. Markets are next.
Wisconsin's dairy farmers are more than just producers of milk and cheese. They're dedicated caretakers of the land, animals, and communities that they call home. Tina Peterson, Director of Wisconsin Communications for Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, explains the essential role that these farmers play and how we can all take part in supporting them.
So we know our Wisconsin dairy farmers have a really long history of caring for their land and water, mostly because these are multi-generational farms, but they also take really great care in making sure they're taking care of their cows and their families and farms and communities. So there's a lot on a farmer's plate, but they are such a vital, important role in their communities, and we encourage consumers to really engage with our dairy farmers, ask them the questions they have, and then they can support dairy farmers by buying products made from our Wisconsin milk. And that's very easy to do in the store. You can go to any retailer and look for products that have the Proudly Wisconsin cheese or Proudly Wisconsin dairy badge.
To learn more about how you can support Wisconsin's dairy industry, visit wisconsindairy.org.
They're back in action after the Juneteenth break in overnight electronic trade. July corn's unchanged, December new crop up a penny and a half at 4.46. July soybeans are up a penny. November new crop up two at 10.70. July wheat, that's currently a nickel lower at 5.70. The July Class 3 milk that goes into cheese down three right now, 17.65 a hundredweight. There's a quick market snapshot on a Friday morning. I'm PM Yonke.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Hi, meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Showers and a few thunderstorms around early, otherwise a mix of clouds and sun and warm with a high of 83. For tonight, partly cloudy, warm and muggy, a low of 74. Hot and humid this weekend, highs in the mid-90s. Heat index values above 100. Right now, it's 66 degrees.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the university system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
Mommy,
Can I sit in the front seat? Just this one time? Please, please, please?
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Quinn Hurley to discuss the Green Bay Tattoo Festival. Chris Ruckdoshel joins me to talk about Muskie Fest in Hayward, and Terry Barr is back from vacation for Bar Band Friday. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
I'd like to make clear again that on this Friday morning at 6:35, we've got a new music library here, and Parker's been surprising me with new bumper music all the time here. Parker, what's the name of this cut? Because these production libraries, they all have interesting names for their tunes.
This Pat
they're very generic ones. What's this one?
This is Lasagna Sunrise.
Lasagna Sunrise.
Yes, sir.
All right. Good to know. All right. Let's meet with our guest now from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and to set it up, say, look, we're going to be talking again about the tax bill that's being considered in the Senate right now. House Republicans passed a version with severe Medicaid cuts. The Senate Republicans are considering even deeper cuts to fund tax cuts for the very wealthy. And because there's so many big numbers involved from a national standpoint, sometimes we need to work a little harder to talk about the local impact. And the local impact here in Wisconsin, especially for rural hospitals, could be quite devastating. And to learn more about it right now, we're going to talk to Catherine Hempstead, who is with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Catherine, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Oh, good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you are a senior policy advisor for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which I guess we should start with that first. If you could give us just the briefest background on what the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is and does.
Sure. Yeah, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is the largest domestic foundation that's really devoted to health. And we think about health in a very broad way. And we're really committed to the idea that everyone has the right to live their healthiest life, and coverage for everyone and access to healthcare for everyone is certainly part of that.
All right. So you've been studying what's being called the reconciliation bill that's being put together. And I won't get into all the minutiae here, but it's called a reconciliation bill to avoid things like a Senate filibuster. And so everything's got to go into one bill. And that's why we're talking about so many different things and such an impact. And as you've looked state by state at the way the bill is structured or being structured right now, what is your estimate there at the foundation as far as what happens over the next decade to rural hospitals across Wisconsin?
Well, the bill involves a massive increase in uninsurance. I mean, I think that's one of the most signature aspects of the bill. There's many different cuts to the Medicaid program that you were talking about, including the imposition of work requirements and changes in the way states can fund their Medicaid programs. And there are also a number of measures directed at the ACA marketplace that would make it more difficult for people to enroll, require more verification from people that would disincentivize them from enrolling or reduce the length of the open enrollment period, a whole set of measures. And then adding to that, there's a very important set of expanded tax credits for the marketplace that aren't being extended. It's not really part of the bill, but it's a decision that's made sort of not to extend those. So when you look at the net effect of all of those measures on coverage, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that 16 million people will lose coverage over the next 10 years. And most of it's going to happen quite soon. And when you, just for some perspective, there are probably between, 27, 28 million uninsured people now. So just imagine what a large increase that is in the size of the uninsured population. And that's going to impact every state. And one of the, there's so many ways that makes itself seen and has so many harmful effects on different kinds of people. But one of the things that's really important about that is that it's a great big hit to healthcare systems like hospitals. And that's what you asked about at the beginning. And that's one of the things that we've been measuring and estimating is what does that translate into in terms of a reduction in healthcare spending or a reduction in revenue for hospitals, for doctors, for dentists, for other kinds of providers, prescription drugs, everything. And it's a massive hit. We estimate $1 trillion less healthcare spending over the next 10 years. And a lot of times we complain about healthcare spending and we think, oh, reducing healthcare spending, that's great. But that's not really what we mean here. What we mean here is that people are not going to be able to access healthcare. So they're not going to be going to the hospital, going to the doctor, getting care that they need. And then providers are not going to get revenue that they need. So this is a reduction in healthcare spending that's coming because people have lost their coverage.
And in Wisconsin alone, your report notes a $3 billion loss over a 10-year period, right?
For hospitals, yeah, $8 billion overall over the next 10 years, looking at all kinds of healthcare spending combined, and $3 billion for hospitals. And that's particularly hard for rural hospitals. Many times have very kind of fragile finances and really depend on revenue from Medicaid and from the ACA. It's important to note that that's just as big a part of it, you know, as the loss of people with that coverage, because CBO estimates roughly equal coverage loss in the two programs, approximately 8 million in each over the 10-year period. But it sort of translates into the same thing. These are people that can't go get care because they don't have coverage. So yes, 8 million total reduction in healthcare spending and about 3 million for hospitals. So there's a great concern about rural hospitals, which I know you have some in Wisconsin. And the other concern is certain sort of safety net hospitals that disproportionately have patients that use Medicaid and maybe that use the ACA marketplace too.
And so on top of that $3 billion over the course of a decade here, the report goes on to note that there will be, of course, an increase in uncompensated care from people that need care just because they lose their Medicaid or they lose their policy coverage through the ACA marketplace. You know, they're still going to need care and they're not going to be able to afford the bill. And your report notes another $900 million over the course of the next decade in uncompensated care. And so we have folks here with Wisconsin hospitals adding those numbers together and saying, you know, that's a nearly $4 billion hit for Wisconsin hospitals, again, many of them in rural areas. And, I mean, you're not saying this explicitly, I don't think, in the report, but it's hard to see how you take a hit that big and a lot of smaller, especially rural hospitals, are going to have trouble keeping their doors open, it would seem.
Absolutely. And there have been some studies looking at particular, you know, groups of rural hospitals that seem to be in particular jeopardy. And a lot of rural hospitals weren't in great shape to begin with. Yeah, it's a huge hit. And we, you know, people that lose their coverage don't use as much care as people that have coverage, obviously, but they don't use no care, you know, so they do tend to show up sometimes in the emergency room because they know they will be treated there. And then they often will be presented with a bill that they have no ability to pay, which ends up being uncompensated care or charity care for hospitals. And that is, you know, another part of the huge financial consequence for hospitals is less revenue and then, you know, demand for services that are then not paid for, which just sort of adds to the financial hole for, you know, for hospitals and other healthcare providers. You know, in addition, obviously, there's a huge consequence for all the people who are not able to get the, you know, the care and the medications and the services that they need. And another thing to think about is how this really ripples out and affects everybody, because surely there are consequences for the people that lose coverage. There are consequences for healthcare providers. And then other people who use those healthcare providers may find, as you mentioned, that they closed, or they may find that they have reduced some services and they no longer offer certain services because they don't have enough money to get the specialists there to offer the services, or they have different hours, or they've laid people off. So the quality or the wait times change. So there's a huge ripple effect that affects everybody, you know. And another thing is hospitals may lay people off. They're very big employers. So then that kind of ripples out into a community. And when people lose their coverage, a lot of times then they start to have financial problems because they get bills that they can't pay, or they stop paying other bills. And so then there can be, you know, economic problems in their local community. So there are huge consequences for this stage of coverage loss that go well beyond just the people that lose coverage. And we know a lot about this because when we expanded coverage through the ACA, we were able to do a lot of good studies and see what happens when a lot of people transition from being uninsured to insured. And we could observe many, many positive consequences. First of all, for more morbidity and mortality, for people's health, and then also for their financial health, their economic health, and for the health of the healthcare economy in those areas. And now, unfortunately, we're getting ready to witness this in reverse.
As noted on YouTube by Tony up in Ashland, hospitals are huge employers in small towns. This is going to destroy small towns in some cases. We're seeing it right here in Chippewa Falls, where we saw the local hospital close a year ago. Now, a lot of this is, we're told by certain politicians, that these are not cuts. These are work requirements to get able-bodied adults off the couch and into jobs that provide health care. It is a claim that is dubious at best. And I'd like to know from the standpoint of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we're talking with Catherine Hempstead, a policy advisor there, these so-called work requirements that are part of this bill, to what degree are they encouraging people to get coverage they otherwise wouldn't have, versus to what degree these are onerous and really are de facto cuts, because people won't be able to keep up with the reporting requirements and things like that?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. I mean, what we know is that almost all of the non-elderly, low-income adults that are eligible for the Medicaid program under Medicaid expansion are either working, or they're doing an activity like working, like they're in school, or they're caregiving, or they have some kind of physical or mental disability that makes it very difficult for them to work. And a lot of these folks work irregularly, so they might have a lot of hours in one month, the next month, not so many. So many people are going to not lose their coverage, not because they're not working or doing another exempted activity, or not because they're exempt, but because they are not able to successfully comply with the reporting requirements. And we've looked at studies of other states that have tried to impose work requirements. There's a study of Arkansas, there's a study of New Hampshire that we've looked at very carefully. And what we find is that the majority of people that lose their coverage are actually eligible for coverage. So they're not losing their coverage because they're choosing not to work, but they could work, but they're losing their coverage because they're not able to successfully comply reporting, which are often very difficult to navigate. People don't always have access to the internet. A lot of people don't have a computer and are trying to do everything on their phone. People have irregular schedules. People work for cash. There are so many reasons why people that are working or doing everything they can to work are not able to successfully document what they're doing. And another good example is Georgia tried to expand Medicaid with a work requirement, and they found, so that was a little bit different. Nobody was losing coverage. People were able to gain coverage if they could document this work requirement. But the program was a complete disaster because it was so difficult for people to navigate the system they set up and document what their coverage was, that they ended up having to wind back a lot of the requirements because they were just so unworkable. So I do feel like what is going to happen here is a lot of, and it's not just a feeling. I mean, what we know from research is that the great majority of people that will lose their coverage are going to lose their coverage for sort of red tape reasons rather than because they are choosing not to work but could work, which is pretty much a unicorn population. Yeah, there's very little evidence of that.
That's exactly it. It's not an unintended consequence. It's very intended. Policy advisor Catherine Hempstead from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Catherine, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. Goodbye. Right.
Today's history lesson is coming up next. You're up north.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Time out.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Matt Nair on air.
From articles that I have seen, if you are a bagel purist, you should not toast your bagel. I think nothing's better than a toasted bagel and a schmear.
Folks, do we have a moment of honesty? Do you really like bagels, or do you like the schmear that is transported by them? Get rid of the stigma. If I walk into this room eating cream cheese out of a tub with a spoon.
Why is that wrong?
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, Vitaly's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like that back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Yeah, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Oh, we have to do one more with Brian Wilson because today would have been his 83rd birthday. Brian Wilson was born this day in 1942 and, of course, passed away just 9 days ago. And a little tribute to Brian Wilson kicks off today's history lesson with the one, the only, the tardy, Greg Bach, everybody. Greg Bach, welcome back.
No one knew I was.
Actually, that's all we talked about in the commercial break.
So. The secret show now.
Yeah, that's the entire Secret Show audience. We are getting nervous for you, buddy.
They got the links messed up and something happened. There's no reason to get, like, to talk about me. Ugh.
Oh, I understand why I should have resent you this. I'm sorry. That makes sense.
Hey, Greg, how's the new guy working out?
let's see here. Get onto the website.
While we're at it, Parker, do you have that spaghetti lasagna thing to play again, the bumper music from the last segment?
Yeah.
Let's play that again instead of Brian Wilson here. And Greg, listen to this bumper music that we had from the last segment.
Oh,
dang. What elevator are we standing in? Now, he's claiming Luke Mathers picked this out.
This was picked by Luke, I swear.
That doesn't
surprised at all.
I really think he was punking you. I do. So, anyway. Let's move on with today's history lesson. Shall we? Because the summer blockbuster genre officially began in 1975, and it all
still
began.
Playing. Yeah.
You can take that out anytime because we're ready to hear what started blockbuster movies in the mid 70s on this day. There we go. Did this movie do anything to either one of you? And I don't mean back when it first came out, but just knowing about it, that there was this movie about shark attacks.
It did nothing for me when it first came out. I can tell you that.
So Jaws came out in what year?
75.
It wasn't new, but it was still a blockbuster when I was little. So right. I was little.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
It made it so I never saw it, and I never did.
But I mean, everybody, even of a younger age, Mr. Olson, you hear this and you know what we're talking about.
Oh yeah, for sure. I had to watch this for one of my classes actually this semester.
What?
Yeah.
What?
I took a sound and image class. It was about sound and movies.
Oh, a sound and image. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, what was this, biology? We're going to learn about fish today.
Welcome to Introduction to Jesus. We're going to watch a movie about a big fish today. It feeds everyone.
This fish can take down a boat.
We're going to need a bigger
boat. Someone call it an ark. So I'm talking.
Moving along in today's history lesson, Chet Atkins. Mr. Guitar, the country gentleman who gave us the National Country Sound, was born this day in 1924. On this date in 1972, during the Watergate scandal, an 18-and-a-half-minute gap appears in a tape recording of conversations between President Nixon and his advisors about the recent arrest of operatives breaking into the Watergate complex. That gap would prove to be fatal to the Nixon presidency.
Nowadays, who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Big deal. Yeah, let's go to war with Iran. Who cares?
Yeah. You know?
Happy birthday to Canadian singing legend Anne Murray. She is 80 years old today.
I love Anne Murray.
This is Anne Murray rocking out, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, this is rocking as Anne Murray gets.
This is this next one is for Dr. Lyerly, who is perhaps the biggest fan of Duran Duran. Bassist John Taylor, 65 years old today, and a co-founder of the group Power Station. Happy birthday to Lionel Richie. He is 76 years old today. Trying not to fall. It was all I could do not just play a bunch of Commodores tunes here.
Yeah. I'm easy like Sunday morning, yeah.
Actor John Goodman is 73 years old today. On this day in 1978, Foreigner released their second album, Double Vision.
I love this song.
Actress Nicole Kidman is 58 years old today. Gregory.
Yeah.
Tell us what how goes the search for new digs for your side hustle over there?
It still goes. We'll hopefully be making an announcement in the next couple of weeks, but we're not finalizing it, but we got something in mind.
Okay.
Yeah. I like it.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
When the Laughing Tap has its big new housewarming party.
Exactly.
Right? Whenever that happens.
For now, I'm going to enjoy weekends off.
I know. Ooh. Good for you.
Who would have thought those would happen?
Yeah. Right.
Let's see. Today is National Clean Your Drains Day.
Yeah.
You ever get one of those snakes and pull that hairball out of your drain?
Yep, and then I just felt bad for a while.
Today is National Flip Flop Day. We used to have a sound effect of flip flops.
Oh, I don't have.
Oh, there it is.
It was so.
Monday was National Take Your Cat to Work Day. Today is National Take Your Dog to Work Day.
I almost did today.
I almost brought her because she was a little like crazy. I'm like, if I knew you weren't going to bark at people, I would bring you to work.
Aw, someday.
Yeah.
someday when you know, we'll let people know ahead of time, like, look, you're going to hear some barking, and that's okay. Mm. And finally, today is National Vanilla Milkshake Day, to which I say, what's the point? If it's going to be vanilla,
chocolate milkshake. It's fine. Yeah. It's good.
What's wrong with that?
My goodness. Stop pooping on people's patio.
Craig Bach, thanks for the visit.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Good to hang with you. We'll see you with Matt and Air on Air. You have anything fun for you and Jane you want to talk about today?
Dan Schaefer in the second hour, as always, recombobulating all the news, and then This Shouldn't Be a Thing at 10:50.
Always love This Shouldn't Be a Thing. All right. Thank you, Greg. Have a great weekend.
You too, guys.
Much more ahead with Joan Esposito in the next hour here live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network and Pat Wrightlund.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump set a deadline on whether the U.S. will carry out a strike on Iran. White House spokeswoman Caroline Levitt says it's contingent on whether Tehran agrees to give up nuclear ambitions.
Based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, he will make that decision within the next 2 weeks.
A federal appeals court says the president can maintain control of the National Guard in L.A. Loyola Law's Lori Levinson.
Trump could overplay his hand by trying to do this throughout the nation. And if that happens, I think the courts might push back on how much discretion the president has, even under the statute.
A man's been charged with plotting to kidnap Memphis Democratic Mayor Paul Young. CBS's Nicole Valdez.
When police later arrested that suspect, they found a taser, gloves, rope, and duct tape in his car.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.